Hi there. This is probably the first time you've ever saw this done in stereo. You go, gee, what's a monaural microphone doing in stereo? Well, that's what you're going to see the answer to that in just a minute here. Back in the 70s, when people used to do component level repair on television sets, people don't do that anymore. The television sets have been described by a friend of mine as something that is optimized to cause the maximum amount of misery of television servicemen. What they do is they make all these sharp, fishhook-like barbs that all kind of point inward, and whenever you stick your hand down through these things, you kind of carefully get your fingers between all these sharp edges and everything, and then you touch something that's high voltage, which causes you to remove your hand violently backwards, causing numerous lacerations and bleeding all over the, you know, I mean, these things are nasty things to work on, you know. You really don't want to work on one of these if you don't have to. There's a lot of hazardous duty pay, you know, sort of involved. Well, anyway, so I designed this. You had problems that were kind of related to things like, you'd get a television set in there, and it would work just fine for 12 hours at a stretch. And then it would kind of goof up for a few minutes and go back to working fine. And you don't dare let one of those out the door because the customer is not going to be a bit happy whenever it continues happening. But you really can't afford to just kind of sit around there with a meter ready to stick some probes on something. So I built this gadget. And basically what it is a couple of voltage-controlled oscillators, one for left and right channel stereo. You'll see why in a second. And then there was a bunch of additional circuitry that would take the signal, the frequency sweep that those voltage-controlled oscillators, a voltage-controlled oscillator changes its frequency with respect to DC voltage, and it would turn that frequency sweep back into a DC voltage which would appear on a meter. Well, that's pretty neat, but what it did is it allowed you then to start a cassette tape recorder, you know, with a long tape in it, and you basically record the output of those two VCOs. And you just hook the probes on to what you think is a couple of likely voltages that'll tell you what's going wrong with the TV set. And as soon as you do that, you walk away, and if you hear the TV set kind of crackle and poof and do whatever it is that it's going to do, at that point you run in there and you go, oh yeah, it screwed up, what do you know? You stop the cassette, rewind back a little bit, and flip the switches the other way, put it in playback mode, and watch what the voltages did. And sometimes watching two voltages at two different places in the circuit can tell you a lot about exactly which component it is that's failing. And so then you can say, yeah, it's got to be that resistor. You know, that's got to be what's causing it because it can't be anything else. And then you solder in the gizmo, and sure enough, the problem goes away. Well, you know, this thing didn't turn out to be as useful as it as maybe it might have been. I mean, it was just one of those ideas I had. I put a lot of work into it, and yeah, I probably got my use out of it, but it wasn't quite the panacea that I thought it would be, you know, whenever I actually got it in practice. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to take that, I dusted the thing off and brought it out, you know, and hooked it all up to this experiment I got sitting in front of me, and I'm going to switch this thing on and let you hear the voltages. And what you'll hear is a couple of tones. One on the left channel is hooked to the wiper arm of R3, and the one on the right, the signal coming out of your right-hand speaker, is hooked up to the output of the op-amp. And that's actually right at the terminal where the light bulb and meter are connected in your diagram. Okay, so with no further ado, I'll reach over here and flip on this little chromium switch. And now you should be hearing both of those signals. Okay, at this point, I've got it hooked up to the wiper arm of R3. If I grab a hold of R3 and I turn it down just a little tiny bit, the output goes full on, or pretty much so. If I turn that thing down just a little, or turn it up just a little bit, I'm turning clockwise now, the output of the op amp goes, low voltage. Now, if I back that back into where it was. Well, what I'm going to do now is, you know, you probably didn't hear much change on the left-hand side, you know, speaker, because left-hand speaker is sort of, well, It's hooked up to the output of the wiper arm, and that's the input of the amp, and it takes very little voltage change to get a wide change in output voltage. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to run it lock to lock, which will take it from the negative terminal of the 1.5 volt dry cell, and I'm going to sweep it slowly all the way to the positive terminal, where I'm going to turn the thing clockwise so that the wiper arm traverses from the negative to the positive terminal of the 1.5 volt dry cell. And of course, when it gets in the middle, the amplifier, being the high gain beast it is, will respond. So now I just dial it all the way up, or all the way down, actually. Okay, so now I'm all the way counterclockwise, negative, which will be as far negative as that dry cell can generate, center tap the way it is, in the present configuration. And as I dial this thing clockwise, I'm continuing to dial it clockwise, you can hear the frequency changing on the left-hand channel, and all of a sudden the right-hand channel responds. I'm continuing to dial it clockwise. Okay, so now you see, out of a 1.5 volt sweep, the frequency change with regard to 1.5 volt sweep ended up right in the middle. I'm going back down again. And you saw what happened right there. Oops, I bumped the wire here. That wasn't part of it. And I back on down. And so now I'm sitting at, the counterclockwise position. Okay, now I'm going to dial it back in the middle and get it kind of somewhere. Now, I'm going to disconnect the input signal for the left-hand oscillator from the wiper arm of R3, and the impedance goes way high, and you probably hear some hum and so forth while I'm diddling with this wire, trying to get it plugged into, if I can figure out how to do that, in some kind of a semi-permanent way. Okay, now we've got it plugged into the wiper arm of R2. Now, I'm going to start R2, same position, I'm going to dial it all the way counterclockwise. All right, so now we're negative. We're at the negative terminal of the 1.5 volt cell. And I'm going to sweep it slowly, just like I did the other one, to the positive terminal. And right there, the op-amp responded. Okay, now what's different about this is that this time, as I sweep up, the op-amp's voltage goes up with me. Okay. Now I'll turn that back down again. Okay, now I'm counterclockwise and I'll sweep up slowly from negative to plus. When I get in the middle, it responds. And I continue sweeping. And I'm all the way to the plus 1.5 volt dry cell voltage. Okay, now I'm going to dial it back down to where it's kind of in the middle and disconnect that from that wiper arm and connect it back to the wiper arm of R3. Okay, now I'm going to dial this guy back counterclockwise, and notice as soon as I dial it counterclockwise, the output of the op-amp goes full positive. And as I continue rotating clockwise, okay, the op-amp responds in the middle, and I continue going clockwise, and this is a negative going input. Basically, whenever this input is positive, at its most positive, it tends to produce a negative output in the op-amp. This is the negative going input. And if I connect it to the other one you saw before, that it was in phase with it. That is, a positive produces a positive result. Okay? That's the nature of a differential amplifier, and that's why one of them is called positive and one of them is called negative. In other words, one's in phase and one's not in phase or out of phase, however you want to look at it. Now, in the middle, where the bulb is sort of, let me get the... It's kind of difficult to adjust these things because there's such a tiny region in there where the pot will respond to, mechanical adjustment. Now, I grab a hold of R1. Now, this is supposed to be rejected. This is what's called common mode rejection, and the op-amp will respond very little. It doesn't mean it doesn't respond at all. It's got flaws. It's not perfect. But it'll respond as little as possible. Let me go to heroics to get rid of this thing. It's called common mode rejection, and if you've got a an op amp that has real good common mode rejection, that's considered a virtue, you see. So my circuit isn't perfect, and you will see that. Whenever I, this one's in about the middle, so if I dial this voltage all the way down, and you'll hear both channels respond to this. Okay, now I'm all the way counterclockwise, which is the lowest or most negative that the wiper arm of R1, and therefore, because R3 and R2 are sort of connected through this, you know, maze of circuitry, they do the same thing. You know, the voltage ultimately ends up to both inputs. Okay, but as I turn this from the counterclockwise, most negative position, and I rotate it through slowly to the most positive position, you do get some response from the output of the op-amp. That's on your right side. I'll turn this back in the center again. But not like you did whenever I try and... I just barely touch one of these other pots, and it makes a vast difference in the output of the op-amp. Okay, so this thing is doing a pretty good job of common mode rejection, and it's pretty sensitive, differentially speaking. Okay, well, this will give you some idea of how the circuit is supposed to work so that whenever you actually build this thing, you'll have some idea what you're going to expect. And since this is stereo, it's chewing up a lot of your baud rate, so, I mean, the stereo ones are big. So I'm going to call it quits for this one right now.